Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever and whenever you happen to be listening to us in this great wide world brought together by the internet. We are once more and again the last three guys to do a podcast for our 53rd edition. John Morgo, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. We're doing a conference call again tonight. I had a very long day at work. After my regular shift, went over to Sunday Ticket, and we'll get into that in a minute. But last night we were, the guys and I were at it. We were in Valley, Alabama, calling the Reinhardt Point ball game. That one went a full 60 minutes, so that was one good thing about that one. The one bad thing about it was the field conditions, even though it really didn't matter to us. We were in a nice, dry press box, but the field conditions was probably playing on a very soppy sponge. Passing was pretty much out of the question, especially for Reinhardt. Billy Hall 0 for 4 with a pick, but rushing was the day of the game. Daniel called it early and often, and sure enough, that's what happened. Reinhardt wins it 19-0. Three rushing touchdowns, one by Billy Hall, one by Trevay Kane, one by McCollin Lanier. No surprise that the fullbacks were the ones who got into the end zone, and Point, for their part, only managed 51 total yards. 22 of them came in the third quarter on one play by Marquez Jackson. They kind of got stuck in the mud. So Reinhardt goes, they are 5-2. They're 3-0 in the division. Point drops to 1-1 in the division, and that sets up a very big game next week as Reinhardt and St. Andrews, the only other unbeaten team, go at it in Laurinburg, North Carolina, and I will be making that trip, and we'll have broadcast details a little bit later on. But guys, again, we had a full game for once, even though we had a couple of power outages. Really didn't matter much, but still, it was nice calling that game from a dry booth. I wouldn't want to be in that mess, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was rain all day. It had rained probably from the morning time. I know here in the metro area, it had rained from the morning time, and it never really stopped until maybe I got back home. I live in Jonesboro.
Right.
So it was, you know, just one of those things to where that's what both teams had to deal with. And Point, a team who had put up 35 points the week before, looked like their offense was moving well, just couldn't get anything going. And it was because of the slop in the turf. I mean, the ball was fumbled at some point of time or in any kind of way, whether it was a muff snap or anything, at least 20 times in that game.
Yeah. There was definitely 11. I think 11 might have been the final official number, but certainly a lot of bobbles,
right,
and a lot of people not handling it very well. I know Reinhardt lost a couple of fumbles.
Just counting the bobbles, it might have been 20.
Right, mm-hmm. and there was actually back-to-back fumbles a couple of times. So real, as I said, a real slop fest. And I think in that, and as you said during our intro, Daniel, this really sets up for Reinhardt's offense. And sure enough, the Eagles did take full advantage of it, gaining 244 net rushing yards. And I mentioned Point only had about 51 total yards. Micah Maxey, his quarterback, he went 4-for-10 for 20 yards, rushing 59 yards. But boy, do they have I'm sorry, 59 total loss yards. So Jackson gained 73, but he lost 15. And Maxey had suffered losses of negative 20, and backup quarterback Keenan Wise negative 23. But that conditions really helped Reinhardt, especially on the defense. Seth Follin had two sacks. Brandon Ballard with a sack. Hervé Akloze with a sack. Kenneth Lowry had three tackles for a loss. So it really set himself up for that defensive line, and it just played into Reinhardt's strengths.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, again, we can credit the Reinhardt defense as well. They closed off those edges. They knocked Marquez Jackson out of the game, which was a huge blow, a huge momentum shift for the rest of the way for Reinhardt, and they were able to take advantage of that. The running game was on point. The defense especially, I mean, you really have to give your hats off to them. Maxey was very uncomfortable oftentimes had to rush out of the pocket. So it was a pretty decent game, a very good game for Reinhardt. Their defense looked like it's coming alive. The defense has actually been pretty good this year. I think the main question we kind of had first couple of weeks of the year is when were their offense going to show up and if they were going to incorporate the running game. I thought Billy Hall managed the game pretty well. And, of course, with his ability to run the football and run it up the gut, and I don't think Leon likes that, but
he's not a pure pocket passer, but he's certainly putting his body out there. And he's absorbing all those hits, which is what he has to do. He didn't lead the team in rushing last night. That was Lanier. Lanier had 72 yards and a score. Hall wound up with just 59. But a lot of that taken away because of the fumbles that Hall just had to fall on in the backfield. Those counted as negative rushing yards.
And I thought that was an incredible job that Reinhardt did, guys, rotating out the running back. They had about six different people run the football. So I thought that you give a different dynamic to the defense and you throw the defense off. You don't know what to expect if you're pointing defense. But kudos to Reinhardt. Hopefully they keep it going and they get it going.
Again, we'll know.
Yes, I noticed that one.
Now go ahead. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Leon.
Yeah, I noticed that was the difference between Reinhardt and Point. Because for the most part, Point was Montrevious Jackson or bust.
Mm-hmm.
Versus with Reinhardt had two back-to-back bruisers that can just punish you the whole day. I mean, it's bad enough that they were dealing with the weather. You know, that was punishment enough. But then when you add the weather along with Lanier, along with Trevay Kane, you know, along with Billy Hall, I mean, it was just an all-around long day for Point in their house. I mean, it was in a way, you know, I know this is football. There are no moral victories in football whatsoever, despite what we've seen at, you know, the Kennesaw State and Reinhardt, where they went off and cut the score. I mean, like, they went off and cut the clock down a little bit. But for the most part, Point fought hard, but they were just overpowered. You know, Reinhardt's offensive line just pushed around Point's defensive line like they were some children. I mean, it was just an all-around, like, it was just like that, like Reinhardt's that bully up the freeway that just comes down and takes your lunch at home.
Right.
Exactly. And this is a dramatic dichotomy from last week. I remember last week we were talking about how the main Georgia programs, Georgia's Tech, University of Georgia, laid eggs in their games. But this time, turn it around, both teams won. And I think the bigger victory out of those two would be to the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets winning down in Miami in a very convincing fashion. Leon and I listened to most of that game as we were headed down. And I was just impressed with how well Georgia Tech was moving against Miami. And I was just wondering, is this more of a statement for Georgia Tech or a statement against Miami?
That's a tough one, John. First off, kudos to Jeff Collins. He struggled this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that is to be said. But for him to go into Miami and I don't care how good or how bad a Miami team is. You go down there, that's a very tough place to play. All the tradition and the fan base, that is a very tough and haunted place to play. And Georgia Tech went down there and they handled business. They did what they were supposed to do. They played damn near a perfect game. And they probably would have had to just to beat Miami. Now, Miami, we've seen their struggles. And their struggles for me is they're having a hard time protecting whatever quarterback they have in there, whether it's a freshman in Williams or if it's in Coachy Perry. They have a hard time protecting that quarterback. Of course, you've got a center who hasn't started a game. This was his first year starting the game. And then you got two freshmen out tackles. So, I mean, yeah, of course, we're in week six, week seven, but this is part of the road that you have to go through. And Manny Diaz is catching it right now. The team is 3-4. They're not playing up to par. about like Florida State. I mean, you know, that's going to actually make an interesting contest when those two teams meet in a couple of weeks, or I think they meet next week, if I'm not mistaken. But, I mean, you know, we have to take it for what it is. Georgia Tech, I thought probably out of everybody, may have had the more shocking victory, I guess you can say. Mm-hmm. A lot of people argue that Georgia State's victory over Army would be shocking, too. But Army is not the team from last year.
No, they're not. No, they're not. And kudos to Georgia State. We'll get into that in a little bit. They defeated Army, and I think the – but let's – I want to turn it over. We talked a little bit about Georgia Tech. Now I want to turn it over to the Georgia Bulldogs. They defeated Kentucky 21-0. Athens, kind of in the same system as the Storm that affected the game at Point. Same area. We went at the same time. Finished a little later. I think we might have finished a little earlier than they did. But really, it's the same exact ball game. I'm looking at the stats. Georgia 21-0 over Kentucky. Georgia had to score 3 rushing touchdowns. Once Jake Fromm was forced to kind of manage the game, and he used touchdowns from DeAndre Swift and Brian Herrien in order to get those 3 scores on Kentucky. Kind of very similar field conditions, even though Sanford Stadium may be 10 times the size of the of Rams Stadium that we were in last night.
I mean, granted, Jake, I mean, granted, Georgia, you know, they won the game. And they won in somewhat convincing fashion by pitching a shutout. But for someone like Jake Fromm, who has, I'm thinking, NFL hopes, 9 for 12 on 35 yards is less than enticing.
Exactly.
I mean, I understand that, you know, granted, you know, it's been very bad weather affecting Georgia. And, you know, they did get the win against a non-ranked team last week. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, within college football, you know, you are judged based on, you know, it's like a pretty contest, like a beauty pageant.
Right.
You know, they understand, okay, you might have won, but how did you win? Showcase your talent. Can you sing? What stands out? And when I see 9 for 12 from a top-tier Division I quarterback like Jake Fromm. I mean, last year, Jake Fromm was a – I mean, he's a perennial Heisman hopeful.
I don't know if he is a Heisman – I don't think he is a Heisman hopeful, at least not with that.
Definitely not this year, but in the college preseason, he's
– Yes.
Yeah, in the pre-college preseason.
Yes, they definitely played him up, but – we were talking about this a couple weeks ago, how he when you force him to throw early, often, and a lot, he is not very accurate with his passes, or more accurately, his team loses. Last night, again, horrible field conditions. He was forced to manage the game, 9 for 12, but only 35 yards. That averages about 3 yards of pickup, so he's not throwing deep balls. He's throwing screens. He's throwing underneath. And again, he managed the game, did what he was asked, realized that it was been foolish for him to try to go deep, especially in those conditions. And now he gets a week off to prepare for Florida in two weeks down in Jacksonville.
And you know what about that? Fromm is going to have to have the repeat performance from Notre Dame. I thought in the Notre Dame game, I thought he played extremely well. He's going to have that kind of game if he's going to beat that Gators defense. And listen, we know the Gator defense can be frowned upon and they can be scored on, right? You know, ask LSU about that one.
Right.
Now, and I know that Georgia's offense is not LSU's, but that's what they're going to have to become that if they want to succeed or whatnot. So they probably needed this bye week. These last 2 weeks have just been too emotional for them. The loss to South Carolina, the meltdown against South Carolina, really kind of took the breath out of them. And remember, guys, this Georgia team didn't score a point until the third quarter. So it was a scoreless first half against Kentucky, which is a Kentucky team that does not have perhaps their two best players they had from last year in Benny Snell and Josh Allen, who are now in the NFL. So they don't have those guys and they don't have the talent that UGA has, and yet they were hanging in there with them at 0-0 at halftime, and they had to come out and get 21 points. But there has to be a little bit more of a balance. I mean, if you're Georgia, the one thing that you may need to preach, if you're Kirby Smart, just don't get into a third and long situation with that Gator defense.
Right.
Because that pass rush is coming.
Yes. And I want to mention that Vanderbilt defeated Missouri yesterday, upset the 22nd-ranked Tigers. So what that does practically in the SEC East, we've got three teams all with one loss, Florida, Georgia, and Missouri, and none of those three have played each other. So we're going to have a stretch coming up. We got Florida and Georgia. Then after that, you're going to have Georgia, Missouri, and then Florida, Missouri. So the winner of the world's greatest cocktail party will be in position, as Leon predicted way back when we started this, will be in position to get the East crown. All they have to do is win this game and then turn around and beat Missouri, and then boom, you're the Eastern Division champion. And consequently, Missouri is going to have to beat, Missouri's probably going to have to beat both of them.
They will.
Yeah, both Florida and Georgia. That's the only way Missouri can get in.
Right.
I don't think they can do it.
No, I don't think Missouri can do it either.
Oh no. No, they can't.
I'm picking like during the preseason I picked Florida to run the table up until they played Georgia. Unfortunately, they were I thought they were going to get past LSU, but unfortunately they did not, which would have meant bigger things for Georgia, because if Florida would be LSU, their ranking would have improved, and that would have made them a more attractive-looking target for Georgia to overcome.
Right.
I'm still holding on to the fact that Georgia will prevail over Florida, and they will actually salvage their season, that the season blunder that they went off and, encounter with South Carolina. I mean, I was very shocked and disappointed, like everybody else in the nation, that Georgia lost that game. But, hey, this is college football. Any given Saturday, it can happen.
And Missouri plays at Kentucky next week. They have three straight road games, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, and then Georgia, before hosting Florida, Tennessee, and winding up at Arkansas. So if they can just get through that three-game gauntlet, or more importantly, don't overlook Kentucky, and I think that's going to be Missouri's danger next week. Don't overlook Kentucky. Yes, you've got two tough games coming up. You're kind of a wounded animal right now after that loss to Vanderbilt, but don't overlook Kentucky, because that will be a prescription for an upset. They have got to win that ball game. If they don't win that ball game, two loss team, then that's pretty much will be. They'll be behind the eight ball, and again, it will be once again the winner of Florida and Georgia representing the East, and of course representing the West. No doubt here. We've got three teams still left: Alabama, LSU, Auburn. We're going to get some separation next week with that big Auburn LSU matchup. And then LSU will get Alabama, and then you get the Iron Bowl around Thanksgiving. And that's what that's what the West looks like.
And, we talk about overlooking. It's possible that we've already seen a team overlook get to next week. Wisconsin took a huge loss. They got a huge loss at the hands of Illinois this week. And next week, they go to Columbus to play Ohio State. So you have to be careful with these kind of games where you overlook a team and then, bam, you go straight in and you dive in head first. So, to talk about Missouri looks like they can be set up for that kind of thing. That's why the Georgia-Florida matchup is actually pretty good for those two teams to have the bye week. They don't have to overlook each other. They got time to prepare. There are no excuses from either side. You just go out there and you play football.
And an interesting thing about that, guys, is that after LSU plays Auburn, both LSU and Alabama have bye weeks before their big matchup on November 9th. And that will be in Tuscaloosa.
Which is in about 2 or 3 weeks, yeah.
Right. So that's going to be in about Yeah, 3 or 4 weeks. 3 weeks, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be weeks. If LSU beats Auburn, you know, that's going to be the CBS will flex that to Saturday night, and they're going to get a huge, huge audience for that one. Although I don't know what their 3:30 game would be. Probably Missouri, Georgia is probably what it would be, and they would just make sure they get that doubleheader going with LSU Alabama.
It was Missouri, Georgia. It was Missouri, Georgia last year, I believe.
Right.
And LSU and Alabama. It just so happened to fall into place. Yeah. So it really doesn't matter what the 3:30 game is, as long as CBS is running and you have an 8 o'clock game, you're good to go.
Exactly. And so now, so that's what the SEC looks like. I'm John Morgo alongside Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. We are the last three guys to do a podcast talking about college football all in the South. And again, the main factor for all these games is the weather, torrential downpours. It probably stopped around 10 o'clock, certainly affected the Reinhardt Point game, certainly affected the Georgia Kentucky game, and to some extent it affected the Georgia State Army game. But you know, Army, you would think, based on their reputation, and they had a great year last year, would be more suited to this kind of matchup. But Georgia State ran behind Trey Barnett. Dan Ellington did just enough to win, and it was, in fact, the Panthers downing the Black Knights by a score of 28-21. That game was tied at the half. Army got a score to start the third quarter. Georgia State added one toward the end of the quarter, and then on the last real big drive, and Dan Ellington led them to the end zone, 28-21. Guys, Georgia State 5-2 right now. They are one win away from bowl eligibility for Sean Elliott. And after last year's basic nightmare sketch season with 3-9, I think it's a great turnaround for Georgia State to be on the verge of bowl eligibility. They have Troy at home this week. I mean, they only need one more win. I'm going to go out on a limb and say they're going to get it. I don't know if it'll be Saturday, but they should be able to get that extra victory. And congratulations to them. And then it just becomes a matter of, can Georgia State get into the first ever Sun Belt championship game? But to do that, they got to beat Appalachian State. And App State now ranked 21st in the latest AP poll. That is the highest ranking ever for a Sun Belt team. No surprise that it's App State. But that is going to be a real tough ball game in a couple of weeks. And luckily for Georgia State, it is in Atlanta. But guys, a very big turnaround down there at the former Turner Field.
Yeah, another fact about that one too, John, mm-hmm. that you mentioned, Appalachian State's victory is the first victory ever from a Sun Belt opponent that is ranked.
Right.
I thought that was like a very, very good analogy there. You know, Georgia State's next tough matchup, you can argue and you can say that it is Appalachian State. I mean, they are the best team in the Sun Belt Conference, 6-0. Their record actually shows that they're ranked 21st, according to the latest AP polls that have come out.
Right.
They're not the highest ranked group of five team. That actually belongs to Southern Methodist, who jumped up to 16, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they could. Appalachian State could really play themselves into a New Year's Six game if they could get into that conference championship. But of course, they're going to have a tough matchup against Georgia State on November the 16th. That's going to be their calling.
Right.
If they can get past Georgia State, then they'll win. Then I believe that they can run the table. But Georgia State is just playing so sound. They're playing so well right now. And kudos to Sean Elliott and his staff. Of course, it was a very, very tough year for the Panthers last year. But, man, he may be coach of the year in that conference, mm-hmm. just because of the turnaround.
Right.
And he may also have a player of the year in Dan Ellington. I think Ellington is just playing lights out football. 20 of 28, 232 yards, 3 touchdown passes. He had a good running game with Barnett running for 100 yards in the score. So, I mean, the balance is there. And the one thing that a lot of people don't talk about is how better the defense has kind of gotten over the last few weeks.
Exactly.
Again,
Exactly. Yeah. That's a great point, Daniel, because even in the upset win over Tennessee, the defense allowed 30 points, and they played they played touchdown for touchdown with Furman and just got ran out of Kalamazoo in that game with Western Michigan, which probably represented the nadir of the season. They were in that game with Texas State, couldn't pull it out at the end, and then finally started to turn things around. Arkansas State, Coastal Carolina, and winning at Coastal Carolina, that's not easy down in Myrtle Beach. Normally the Chanticleers, well, the Chanticleers are having a down year this season, but anytime you go to the Temple of Teal and get a victory, it's very good for your season, very good for your confidence. Again, they have won three in a row, and if they don't get that win against Troy, they'll most certainly get that sixth win the following week when they have to go to Monroe, Louisiana, and take on the ULM Warhawks on November 9th, because I think there is a bye week shoved in between the Troy and that ULM game, and then it's the last couple of games of the year against South Alabama, Appalachian State, and finally the season finale down at Paulson, down at Georgia Southern. And boy, Georgia Southern is struggling as well. Chad Lunsford, that is, it's not a Georgia Southern type year, although they did win last week against Coastal. But Georgia State's got to be liking its chances against Georgia Southern this season. The Panthers could easily, guys, pick up 7 or 8 wins and maybe go to another bowl other than the Cure Bowl in Orlando, because the last two times they were bowl eligible, that's where they wound up. Lost their first night game to San Jose State, won 2 years ago against the Hilltoppers of Western Kentucky, and their mascot, one of the top 10 mascots in all of college football, the Big Red Thing. If I'm Georgia State right now, I'd be like, let's go somewhere else. We've worn out the Cure Bowl. Let's find another destination for us. And if they can pick up 7, 8, 9 wins, they got an outside shot at 9. That would involve running the table. I think 3-1 is definitely doable. 2-2 probably will be a little more likely, and that would get them to 7. But I think they might actually be higher up ranking when it comes to a bowl. And if they do, in fact, beat Appalachian State, well, then all bets are off when you head into that conference championship down in New Orleans. And it's very interesting because the Sun Belt has 10 teams. I mean, if they wanted to, they could go Big 12 route and play a round robin. I think the only team that Georgia State does not play is Louisiana, but they kind of shrunk it by a game, and that way they set up the conference tournament. So you could have, unlike most other conference tournaments, conference championship games, there'll be a high likelihood that the two teams going at it will have played each other once before during the regular season, and that might take a little bit of the luster off a conference championship game, because it's kind of obvious what they're doing. I think Sun Belt could really use two more teams for an effective conference championship. Because right now it just seems almost like not so much a money grab, but more of a prestige grab.
Yeah, that's why it's important for Georgia State to roll and just maintain their momentum, because if they roll over Louisiana Monroe and they roll over Troy, and using Trey Barnett, who's having a nice historical season this year, then that conversation can be taken more seriously as far as them stepping up to, greener pastures as far as competition is concerned.
Right. And in that game last night, Trey Barnett scored his 13th rushing touchdown. That ties the record for most rushing touchdowns in a career. He joins Kyler Neal. He's got about five, possibly six, maybe seven more games in order to pick up that record. And we wish him the best as he goes after that mark in the Georgia State record book. All right, John Morgo, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. Again, we are the last three guys to do a podcast, doing a conference call here today, as that's just the way things have been working out. We'll probably do this again next week, because I got another Sunday ticket late afternoon. We'll get into that in a moment. A couple things also going on, guys. Tuesday night, it's the NBA season opener. The league finally gets going, And Adam Silver must be suffering through one of his worst nightmares, because he looked at the schedule and he says, you know what? I want my heralded rookie. I want my number one rookie who's got a lot of hype. I want him to play. I want him to play against the defending national championship champions. I want ratings. And then New Orleans says, yeah, well, Zion's hurt. So New Orleans and Toronto and no Zion in that game. And I know Leon, he's got a lot of opinions on this. And we were talking, the two of us were talking about it on the way back from Point University yesterday. And Leon, your big concern when we were talking about this is this going to be a predictor for Zion Williamson's career?
Well, you know, if he remains 280 pounds and he works in New Orleans, where I don't think they have anything that has to do with the vegan in New Orleans, we're going to need him to slam up.
Well, it's not so much the vegan thing, Leon. It's more of he's got to stay away from Café Du Monde and the beignets. That he's got to stay far away from that. I mean, you could be vegan and live off of beignets for the rest of your life and still be a candidate for a heart attack at 30, you know. So he's got to stay away from that. He's got to work himself out, get some weight off, be more so he can be more versatile on the floor. And I think that is where you were headed in this discussion that we had.
Right, because we've seen this in, like, LeBron James and, you know, players like Carmelo, Paul Pierce early in his career. But let's look at LeBron. In his 20s, this man was, you know, around about 6'9", 270, muscle. But, you know, LeBron came to the conclusion that, you know, hey, if I want to go off and, you know, break some records and prolong my career the healthy way, he's going to have to slim up. You know, we've seen this also with, you know, the late Ray Mello. I'm not saying late Ray man's not gone, but I think he may be out the NBA. But a lot of these gentlemen, you know, have to slim up. And we've seen those who did not slim up, you know, the Shaquille O'Neals, you know, he suffered through a whole mess of injuries. But then you look at some superstars that remained slim throughout their whole careers. Like, we're talking about the great Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who never really went through problems like that. So, you know, when we look at someone like Zion, when I see Zion, I see Charles Barkley.
Right.
You know, he's you know, Charles Barkley was athletic. He was big. He was nasty. You know, I think, you know, Zion has a real, you know, real good attitude on him and everything like that. His image is that of a smiling kid, you know, fresh out of high school or, you know, 1 year of college, you know, 2 years removed from high school. You know, he was able to amass 20 points per game throughout the preseason. I mean, we've never seen that before. And if we have, it's been a very long time. So, I mean, he's promising, but in order for that knee injury that he's going through not to foreshadow his career, you know, we don't want him to be like Greg Oden. He's going to slam up. You know, I think this man jumps out the gym. We're going to need him to slam up.
Right. Daniel, what do you think?
I agree with that.
Yeah.
No, I agree with that. I agree with everything Leon is saying. I think that has always been a problem when everybody looks at him. I mean, he is a guy who's 280, 285. I mean, man, that's a huge chunk, man, especially for his athleticism. I think if he slimmed down about a good 20 pounds and added on lean muscle, I think that he would be just fine. And he would be damn near unstoppable. Like, I mean, he can already do some things at his weight that a lot of kids can't do. You know, I mean, his footwork is amazing. His quickness, his awareness to get out on the ball, you know, and to attack the rim. He attacks the rim. When he attacks the rim, he looks like LeBron James, you know, and especially the young version of LeBron. So, you know, it's something else. But what's really going to hurt is that, you know, opening night is such a big night in the NBA. Right, and
yes.
In the NBA, it's not just about the teams, but it's really about the stars. So you want to showcase your teams and your stars. Of course, the Toronto Raptors are going to get that, regardless on who's on their team. they could have had a JV type squad on their team. They still get that honor, it just like any other team should get to raise their banner on opening night. They should be the first game. The thing is now, their first game was against this box office attraction named Zion Williamson, who now is not going to be there. So now you're looking at yourself and you're saying, you know, from a rating standpoint, man, we got to wait until 10:30 to watch the actual marquee game now. Zion Williamson is not playing in this game. So, I mean, now we have to stay up late to watch, which is the game to watch, because these are two teams that you better believe they may be in the West final come the end of the year, the Lakers and the Clippers. So that's the kind of conflict now that you have, especially when you have injuries. I mean, you just never know. You never know with it. But this right here will definitely make the NBA consider cutting down preseason games and maybe cutting down regular season games. Because think about it last year, guys. We thought that the regular season just dragged forever, especially before the year before last, especially because we knew that Cleveland, when LeBron was with Cleveland, we knew Cleveland and Golden State were on a crash course collision to meet again in the finals. We knew that was going to happen. And those last 4 years when we got a chance to see that rivalry take place, it was a long season. 82 games, because we already knew what was going to happen.
Right.
You know?
But so, I don't think we have that certainty this year, though. We don't.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
Which makes it so much better. And you know why we don't have that certainty? Because the super teams no longer exist.
Right.
Their teams now, the legitimate teams, only really have two superstars. The Rockets, they have Westbrook and Harden. Mm-hmm. Brooklyn, they have Kyrie Irving. Durant won't be playing this year. The Clippers, they have Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. The Lakers, they have LeBron and Anthony Davis, and they have a bunch of other guys that can get it done, too. So, I mean, the parity of the league is why I've never been this excited. And, well, it's been a long time since I've been excited about the league being like this. And I can't remember a time when it was this wide open, guys. I really can't.
But the question is, will the casual fan be interested in the NBA this early? Because usually the casual fan starts looking at the NBA with that Christmas quintuple header. That's when the casual fan starts turning to the NBA. Will that casual fan come? And Leon's saying he's coming. Leon says it will be true.
Yeah, absolutely. You've never seen an arms race in the NBA like you've seen this past offseason.
Yes, this past offseason, no question. This past offseason was the craziest in NBA history. And will it translate into early season interest?
Yeah, and it's not even over. You had the arms race that drew observers. Mm-hmm. You know, then you have another major pinnacle that will happen to NBA this year, and that'll be the trade deadline.
Okay.
Adjustments will be made. But for, like Daniel was saying, the dynamic duos that we've seen this year, I mean, first of all, you have to go to Houston with the Russell Westbrook, James Harden. People want to see that. People are interested. How is it going to wind up? You know, even outside of Zion, I know, personally speaking, I want to see how Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Josh Carter, Drew Holiday, and company norms will pan out. Are they going to finish over or under 40 games this year? Because the West is very competitive. We got to look at the dynamic duo that exists in San Antonio with DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge, though they are less talked about. They will be going to the playoffs this year. People are sitting here sleeping on Denver. What are they going to do this year? So will they repeat the number one seed this year? And always you have that elephant in the room that remains in the Bay Area called Golden State, who added 6'5". Point guard, Dynamo, D'Angelo, snitching, got kicked out the Lakers, got the foot and the boot in the rear end on his way out to Brooklyn. But this man is back with the biggest in the Western Conference, played alongside Steph Curry. What are they going to do? Mm-hmm. So it's a lot going on this year. I mean, I've been on this planet for 37 summers, and I've never seen the NBA so evenly stacked this year. I haven't even brought up Philadelphia or what Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to be doing in Milwaukee this year, or how Boston's going to look with Jaylen Brown asking for more money. This man turned out $80 million, so he plans on being a star this year. I mean, it's a lot going on right now. What's going to happen with Chris Paul? I mean, it's like the NBA is turning into a soap opera alongside the NFL.
Right. And Boston probably has the toughest 1-2 punch to open up. They start out at Philadelphia, then host Toronto.
So it's going to be, you know, I think that New Orleans will win that game. Because, you know, with Zion Williamson being out, that gives room for Brandon Ingram to shine.
Okay.
Because, they have Brandon Ingram come off the bench now.
Right.
With Zion Williamson going down for X amount of weeks, that's going to give Brandon Ingram a chance to go off and showcase what he really has.
Well, let me pose this question to you guys. Are either of you considering traveling to Gateway Arena to see the College Park Skyhawks play? And for those of you who don't know, they are the G League affiliate of the Atlanta Hawks, and they have pulled a page from the Atlanta Braves playbook in having their AAA team, or what you would consider AAA team, main farm team, basically in their own backyard. In this case, down in College Park, a stone's throw from the airport. Would you guys consider going to see a Skyhawks game?
I would. I don't see why not. And also, it's funny because word has it that the Atlanta Dream would also be playing.
Yes, the Dream, announced that. It's a good point, Daniel. Just announced that on Thursday or Friday, I think, was that formal announcement.
Thursday, Friday.
I think this is kind of interesting because if you're an opposing team, you fly into the airport. You don't have to leave the airport. You know, the arena's right there. There are nice hotels. I mean, we all know the reputation Atlanta has of being an after-hours town. Let's just put it that way. For these G League teams, they're not going to experience that. They're going to be at the airport. They're going to play their game. Then they're going to fly out. And it's just a matter of whether or not they can sneak to MARTA and get into the clubs before coming back down. Now, the NBA, they have none of this. I mean, I remember back 10, 15 years ago, people wanted to come. It's not so much wanted to play here, but even though there was a little bit of an allure there under the days of Mike Fratello and Lenny Wilkins, no, they were just happy, come in, play the game, get a night off, go to the clubs, and then get out of town. I don't think they can handle 82 nights of that, and Atlanta's vibrant nightlife scene. So what about you? What about you, Leon? Would you consider going to see the Skyhawks?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes, especially with the you can look at potential prospects. I mean, just a social event. You know, like it could be like a Maya social event. You know, I would definitely go. If I would go to a Georgia State game, so I would definitely go see some pros play. And I consider G League players to, you know, they're paid professionals.
Right.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind doing that.
Okay. Well, hopefully we'll have to make an outing one night when we're all free. Head down there, catch a game. I think that would be fun. So before we get off the NBA, Leon, has your predictions changed since we got them from you about when practice started?
Well, I'm picking Lakers. You know, I'm not only being a homer. I'm just being honest. I don't see any team within the NBA, the National Basketball Association, that will be able to stop that pick and roll that will happen between LeBron James and Anthony Davis, barring injury from both of them, and I hope that won't happen. You know, with the exception, the only team I can see guarding the pick and roll between LeBron and Anthony Davis will be the guys across the street who are Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, which I don't see Paul George even remotely stopping anything I can do with LeBron James or Kawhi Leonard, stopping someone like Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis is not Giannis Antetokounmpo. You know, that's going to be a very long night for anybody who plays Lakers.
Yes.
You know, we haven't seen, and then, you know, they've invested, the Lakers have invested a lot of stock in defense, you know, with the addition of Avery Bradley. There are shooters around LeBron with the Jared Dudley addition. I don't know how much playing time he will get. I like how we stayed steady at the point guard position with keeping Ray on Rondo. And for the record, the Lakers have not cut DeMarcus Cousins. We will let him heal. Oh, no, we didn't cut him.
Right.
You know, I'm just concerned is where will Dwight Howard fit in the equation? Are we going to have him start over to Harold McGee? Are we going to let him pretty much, are we going to rotate him? You know, also with Kyle Kuzma, you know, because Kyle Kuzma is technically, you know, he's 6'9". You know, he could play between the 3 and the 4. You know, how is his minutes going to be affected? Because this man, you know, he's averaging double digits a game. Kyle Kuzma was actually on track to be 20-10 this year. But we got Anthony Davis now.
Right.
So it's a lot going on with the Lakers right now. I like our chances.
All right. Well,
you know, I think you're kind of stating the obvious. I'm gonna actually go a little off radar. I think today, and you know, of course, it's gonna change once the playoffs start, but it may be this way. I think it will be the Clippers and the Bucks in the NBA Finals. But and you have to say something like that because that's how this NBA Finals. That's how this NBA season is. It's so unpredictable that we don't know what we're going to see. So I'm just going to say the Clippers and the Bucks in the NBA Finals.
Okay.
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that.
Well, he says Los Angeles, so you got that. So the two of you agree on that.
I'm not feeling that, man. Daniel Petrangelo. Daniel
But think about it, though. It's the obvious, though. The Lakers have the best roster in basketball. That right there is no question. That is no question.
Blasphemous. Man, I got holy water. I'm going to pour some holy water for you, man.
I know you are.
Blessing, Father. Wait, that's
exercise the spirit. Be cleansed. Be cleansed.
I think LeBron will be the MVP this year. I do. I think he's on a whole nother level, number one. Number two, he's got Anthony Davis, who's going to help him out a lot. You know, and he's going to – him being a point guard, at first I kind of sniffed at it, but then I was thinking, I was like, man, that might be pretty good to have him at the point guard position.
Our backup point guard is Quinton Cook.
Which actually played pretty well last year. So with the Golden State Warriors last couple of years, rather, he played pretty well. So I thought that was a pretty good pickup as well.
Yeah, we got some guys like the Lakers got people. We kept KCP. We got Avery Bradley. Mm-hmm. Like I said, Jared Dudley. We have Giannis Antetokounmpo's little brother, and he looked pretty good during the offseason. The roster, Jason Kidd and Frank Vogel are going to have a heck of a time managing minutes this year. I'll tell you that much.
Right.
It's going to be a lot going on. And back to in reference to LeBron being MVP, when have you ever seen LeBron James actually play like he has something to prove?
Well, he hasn't had anything to prove in a while. Now he does.
You got something to prove this year.
Exactly. Exactly.
You got Kawhi Leonard and Paul George across the hall.
Right. Guys, we're going to have to leave it there because we're getting short on time, and I have one other topic I just want to touch on before we get to our final final 60 seconds of topics, and that, of course, is the NFL. Two things to mention. First of all, the Atlanta Falcons lost to the LA Rams 30-10, and I didn't see much of the game. I do know that Matt Ryan got hurt, and Matt Schaub actually came in and led the Falcons to their only touchdown in garbage time. But again, all I see is what I see on Twitter, which is probably not a good idea, because the Falcon fans have pretty much given up hope right now, and there's a little bit of concern that maybe the team has given up hope as well, and it just seems like Dan Quinn will be gone sooner rather than later. And before you guys chime in on that, I also want to mention that when I was at Sunday Ticket this afternoon, the game that I was working was the contest between Leon's Chargers and the Tennessee Titans. And if you didn't see that game, Tennessee won it 23-20, even though the Chargers had three chances to get into the end zone, and actually three chances they might have gotten into the end zone, but their running back Melvin Gordon couldn't quite get in, and when he did get in, he either fumbled, and it just seemed like a very lost game for Philip Rivers. But give Ryan Tannehill a lot of props. He was able to back up Marcus Mariota and led the Titans, maybe not a convincing victory, but he kept some drives going. Chargers got into it. They had a touch. They were down by two touchdowns. They got one on a prevent defense oriented drive from Tennessee, and Philip Rivers just basically carved up Tennessee secondary because of that prevent defense. But really a heartbreaking loss for Leon's Chargers, drops them into a tie for last with the Broncos in the AFC West. And the Falcons, they are in basically sink, or they're basically sinking at 1-6, and they're getting very, very close to start focusing on draft position. And of course, last year they won those three games at the end, which kind of pushed them to the middle of the pack. And it'll be interesting to see whether or not they go into full tank mode, going with the Dolphins, the Bengals, and quite possibly the Washington Redskins.
I'm gonna tell you right now, guys. The best thing that came out of that Falcons game from the Atlanta Falcons standpoint was Devontae Freeman getting ejected. That was the best thing that came out of that. He got ejected for throwing a punt. That means he showed fight, and that means there's some frustration there. That was the best thing that came out of that whole ridiculous game and that ridiculous effort that the Falcons put on. This was worse than Tennessee's loss. This was probably worse than the Houston Texans, and the Houston Texans hung 63 up on them.
Well, they didn't have any fight. They had given up before the game even started.
Have any fight. They don't have any fight. You can tell. And I just saw a video on Facebook. Of course, Pastor Troy is a resident Atlanta Falcons fan. Of course, he's from the state of Georgia. He goes into the locker room, and I'm looking at the video, and the locker room just looks so dead. Mm-hmm. It looks so defeated. And it is. And it looks defeated. It looks divided. And you know, kudos to Pastor Troy for trying to, you know, hype that team up and still, you know, showing his support and all of that. But my goodness, man. I don't know what has to happen at this point. No need to tank. Go out with your head up, with your head raised high. But my goodness, you can just see the signs. I mean, everybody's now talking about it. Everybody is. I mean, even the commentators are just like, wow. This is a team that was expected to at least challenge, not necessarily contend, but challenge for at least a spot in the playoffs. And they're challenging for a top five pick in the draft next year.
Right.
That for that pool of talent to be playing the way that they're playing at 1-6, we've lost five in a row at 1-6, and you're playing the way that you're playing, they are clearly the most disappointing team in the NFL right now.
Exactly. And the thing about it is, guys, they're not even going to be able to play any of those other teams that I mentioned that are tanking. They might be able to get a victory with the – because they still have two games with the Panthers, one game with the – no, I'm wrong. Two games with the Panthers, two games with the Buccaneers, and unfortunately two games with the Saints. They haven't played any of their divisional games, so we'll see if they can pick up one along the line there. But I'm thinking 3-13 is probably going to be where the Falcons wind up.
Man, I have to interject.
All right, interject, Leon.
Hey, Andrew, you said that the Falcons are the most disappointing team in the NFL?
Well, you're going to say Chargers, of course.
No, please. You know, the Falcons didn't make the playoffs last year.
Mm-hmm.
Correct? The Chargers were actually in the conversation for challenging New England last year. The Chargers were actually in the conversation of getting signing Melvin Gordon, signing Melvin Gordon, because you have the Rams that are going up and gearing up. You got this new stadium opening up. You know, you got the Lakers are opening up. You know, you have the Clippers are gearing up. There's going to be a lot of competition to succeed in the LA market. And the Chargers, pretty much this Sunday that we've seen, was Melvin Gordon fumbling at the goal line, which was his first fumble since 2016.
And he fumbled twice. I think one he was able to get it back, but the other one he didn't.
You know, to the point where we're looking to tank this year, from what it looks like. We can't beat nothing. I mean, we've given whatever momentum that we've had to Denver, mm-hmm. and though they stunk it up today, they clipped off two wins. We're three games behind the Chiefs, who happened to win today with a backup quarterback.
Yeah, that was a Thursday night
you
game.
Know, and us losing in turn to a backup quarterback. I mean, the Chargers were looking to were one of the teams picked in the preseason to at least make the playoffs this year. I don't know about challenging for the Super Bowl, because I think that was, you know, a predetermined between the Chiefs and the Patriots. But with Patrick Mahomes going down for next year to 4 weeks, we don't know how that's going to wind up from the Chiefs' point of view. But it seems that the Chargers cannot get out of their own way.
Yeah.
You know, granted, you know, Philip Rivers put up about 329 yards today, and he threw zero picks and threw two touchdowns, the first multiple touchdown game he's had in quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
But he only averaged 8.7 yards per throw. You know, and we have Melvin Gordon has yet to even rest for 100 yards. I mean, is he even in game shape yet? I don't know, but it looks like he's not. From, you know, you have 11 rushes for 32 yards.
Right.
Goodness. I mean, maybe I'm speaking from the point of view of, because that's my team, I'm disappointed, but I'm looking like, hey, dude, you know, at least with the Falcons, you guys didn't make the playoffs last year. The Chargers actually went to the playoffs last year and made some noise, and this is like a total 180. Like, we you know, it's like Phillip Rivers, and I'm not putting it all on Phil. I'm not putting that, let me go off and say this, because if anything is a team game, it's got to be football.
Right, it is.
Everything is predicated upon the cooperation.
Right.
Just the quarterback just happens to take, you know, when the rubber meets the road and the blame game is distributed, politics demands that someone takes the blame, and it will be the quarterback or the head coach.
Exactly. All right, we're going to have to leave it. I'm sorry, Leon. We're going to have to leave it there because we're running short on time, and it's time for 60 seconds to tell you about things that you might have missed during the week. I want to talk about one, Jacob Hayward. Mr. Hayward, he might be related to Jason Hayward. I don't think so, but he might be. He is a prospect in the San Francisco Giants farm system, and he achieved a very a strange distinction. He was playing in the Arizona Fall League for the Scottsdale Scorpions, and he was called third strike, and he got ejected. Well, that happens every day. What's so unusual about that? Well, gentlemen, he became the first person ever to be ejected, arguing a called third strike to a robot umpire. He took umbrage at where the robot, quote, robot umpire system, it's basically an automated ball strike system, an ABS, being deployed as a trial basis at Salt River Fields. Now, it uses software to determine where a pitch crossed the strike zone and then adjusts it for the height. Home plate umpires wear a receiver and an earpiece so that the system can tell them if it's a ball or strike, and then they relay that to the field. Well, Mr. Hayward didn't like that third strike. He argued vociferously, and the robot and the ABS and that umpire, who basically has, and he's not even behind home plate, he's being relayed in the booth, basically told him to heave ho and leave the festivity. So Jacob Hayward becomes the first person to get called out to be ejected from a ball game by a robot umpire.
Good God. You think that's the future? They're going to start having robot empires?
They are trying out the technology and probably another effort to speed up the game. But we'll see. This is just an experiment. We'll see if it is considered a success and used at different levels, maybe in rookie leagues, either next year or the following year.
There goes a lot of people's jobs, don't you think?
Yeah. All right, who's next?
I'll go. Mine's called Cry Me a River. Now, that's ironic coming from me. I think I just spent about the past 3 minutes, you know, crying up an ocean. But mine goes out to the NCAA. And specifically John Calipari, who's, you know, I believe he's speaking for a lot of coaches. Well, it seems that the NBA is giving lip service, or it may even come into fruition, of re-administering the third round of the NBA draft. Now, some people say, like, dang, like, third round NBA draft, it's safe to say that most players that are picked less than 20 are pretty much destined for the G League. That's the point. We're about to see if there's a third round that's going to institute the NBA. The implications for the NCAA, who is already going to open up their wallets and start paying kids because of the law that the state of California passed, in which the kids can start getting paid off their likeness. Now it's to the point that the kids that are even good enough to even be paid for their likeness will bypass the NCAA and go straight to the NBA by way of the G League. And I remember we were discussing this in like early in the genesis of our show with LeVar Ball talking about getting his own league. And, you know, people are saying, well, wow, the kids won't even make like maybe $100,000 a year or less. Well, if I got the opportunity to make $75,000 or go to college and make no $1,000, which one, logically, I mean, which one are you going to take? I'm going to take the money.
I'm not going
to. Yeah, but by all means, I'll take $75K to get paid to play basketball.
Yep.
So I'll take $100. Oh, indeed I will. And I'll bypass the NCAA. So now the NCAA is going to be turned into pretty much, you know, it's going to turn into JUCO ball. You know, which, you know, now is the NCAA will be forced over the pocket to start paying these kids.
Daniel and I have called JUCO ball. That's nothing to laugh about, guys. You see some good. You see some good action in JUCO ball.
JUCO ball is some of the best basketball you could get out of anything. I'm telling you, it is great basketball to watch.
Exactly.
I believe it. But now Duke University Coach K might be forced to deal with that. John Calipari will be forced to be here to deal with some of that. The University of Kentucky will be forced to deal with some of that. It's to the point now where the NCAA, you're going to have this look like the Battle of the Seniors again.
And I don't think that would be a bad thing. You get kids.
Yeah, it's going back to that.
You get kids growing up with a program, learning the program, and being more stylish. Not stylish, that's probably not the best word. Polished. Because these guys are teaching the game. I don't think you're so much teaching. When you're a professional, you're not teaching the game. And I think a lot of these coaches, especially in the pros, they don't want to be teaching the game. They want those kids to learn. And guys, a lot of the time is what we think of fundamentals. And this is my get off the lawn, you know, hey, kids, get off my lawn kind of bit. I mean, we see a lot of flash right now in the game today. The fundamentals, that has not been as developed. And maybe we can get back to the fundamentals.
This is true. We've seen, I mean, one of the most celebrated NBA power forward slash centers of all time went to Wake Forest for 4 years and was, I believe, a swimmer all throughout high school. Talking about Tim Duncan, right. The big fundamental check clause.
Right.
You know, we have the, I mean, it's to the point now where we may go back to the days of old school heated college rivalries.
I hope so.
I mean, it can happen. I mean, back, I mean, wasn't we look at players like Patrick Ewing, who did 4 years at Georgetown.
Mm-hmm.
We look at people like Akeem Olajuwon, who he wasn't a freshman, he came out. Michael Jordan was a junior, he came out of North Carolina. We're going back to those days, whether college basketball likes it or not.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be that bad.
But at the same time, but the players like the Zion Williamsons and the Kevin Durants, who said to say Kevin Durant didn't have to go to college. I mean, you know, he went to you know, Texas, and you know, he hung out there for a little while. Andrew Wiggins went to Kansas and hung out there for a little while. Anthony Davis went to UK and hung out for a little while.
I don't think even Ben Simmons did that. Well, you know, I mean, it was about six, maybe 3 months. Did Ben Simmons ever set foot in a campus building that wasn't dedicated to athletics? In other words, did he go to class? I don't know.
I don't think so. In the words of John, these guys are going to college and major in MBA.
Exactly.
Kyrie Irving went to Duke and hung out for a little while.
I don't think this is a bad. Like I said, Leon, what you're describing, I don't think is a bad thing. People staying in a system for 4 years, get their game polished, play fundamental basketball, you're going to get some exciting contests. And I really believe that basketball is the same no matter where it goes. But more importantly, all these kids who are going to stay there, they're going to be the same level. They're going to have the same talent. So you're going to see some excellent game. And I think, you know, I think the college game would benefit from this. I don't think it'll be a bad thing. But
this is the lightning rod, though, John.
Yeah, it is. It is.
The NBA doesn't draft seniors.
Right.
In college. They don't. They haven't done it for quite some time. So it's like, ooh, like they're pretty much drafting. If you look at the NBA draft, they're drafting at the 19-year-olds.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You got the days now where you got people like Dwight Howard who, I mean, I remember Dwight Howard came to the league. This man is a 15-year vet. He's like 33 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're looking at this point. So we're going to see. It's going to be good. The future will be interesting. But cry me a river for John Calipari and those coaches. You're going to have to actually coach now.
Exactly. All right, Daniel, you're up.
All right. So different segment for me. This one is called Buying In and Selling Out. So I will be buying in a story, selling out another story. All right. So let's go with the buy-in. Guys, I don't know if you know or if you've noticed, Steven, but there's an overtime rule that actually kind of went over my head in college football. So, of course, you know, in the first two overtimes, each team possesses the ball. If they score a touchdown, they get to kick the extra point. And then you go on a field goal on an extra point if the other team matches it. Of course, we do that for the first two overtimes. In the next two overtimes, if a team scores a touchdown, they have to go for two for the two-point conversion.
Right.
That's after the third overtime. But I think the new rule just went over in the North Carolina and Virginia Tech game. After the fourth overtime and the fifth overtime, each team is granted a two-point attempt. No, not a conversion. Each team actually starts at the three-yard line, and they get one play to put it in to end the game. It's almost like a set-and-death two-point conversion attempt. Unfortunately, for North Carolina, they were on the bad end of it. They lost 43-41. I actually like that rule because, number one, it cuts down time, right? I mean, if you're going past the fourth overtime and y'all haven't figured this thing out yet, but both of them hadn't because both teams ended up missing field goals to either tie or win the game. You go in and you line up at the three and you go for it there, and then you put in your best play and you go for it, and the next team that scores wins the game. That's how it goes. I like that rule. I'm buying into that rule. I really like that rule. I'm selling out the referees. They have been so atrocious this year that really the last 3 years. So during the Georgia Southern Coastal Carolina game, something you don't see every day before the fourth quarter of Southern's home game against Coastal Carolina, both teams were given an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. Now, of course, the Oklahoma Texas, they had a pregame scuffle. There was shoving between Notre Dame and USC. Hell, we've seen it between the Falcons and the Rams today, which got Devontae Freeman ejected. Now, why is that so different? There was no scuffle. There was no fighting. Oh. There was nothing. Both teams were assessed unsportsmanlike penalties for a dance off. They were dancing against each other, and the referees threw flags and ejected some players.
What?
We can't dance off against each other. I mean, if you look at the video is everywhere, guys. Georgia Southern's team is maybe about 20 yards away from Coastal's bench. They just danced off. Nobody got in nobody's face. They had a dance off. You remember in school, Leon? Everybody used to get together in a crowd and they used to have a dance off, like a pop rockets contest or something like that. That's basically what it was. They got into a dance off. I'm selling out the referees. Y'all are taking the fun out of the game. Come on, be serious. Be serious.
Oh, that's
gotta be kidding me.
That's funny.
Oh, goodness.
Well, I guess the not for fun, the no fun league kind of trickling down to the college level. All right, that's going to wrap us up here for the last three guys to do a podcast. John Morgan, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown, thank you so much for joining us. Again, catch us every week on SoundCloud. We'll be with you next week. Hopefully we'll have a working on getting a guest for that game as for next week as well. Hopefully we'll have that for you. And thank you so much for your patronage. Catch me on Reinhardt Athletics. You can also catch me at Georgia State. And, of course, my Twitter handle, John_Morgo. Any questions, please let us know, and we'll hope to answer them for you. Hope to give you some new features on the podcast. Hopefully get some video capabilities. Maybe tape it on YouTube or Facebook Live. Can't wait to show what we all have. So in 6 weeks' time, we'll be back. Thanks so much. You have a good night. And we'll best of luck to you and all your teams.